Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. I'm here with Rachel Lowe, MBE, creator of the iconic Destination board game series. Hello and welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
Well, you were saying earlier, this is your first podcast. Is that right?
It is. I've been asked to do so many of them and I have a little bit of phobia about doing them, but this one's quite a special project. So I felt like I really ought to say yes to this one.
Wow, it's amazing. And we are so glad that you've chosen for your first podcast to be with us. I'm so excited for this conversation, Rachel. I had the opportunity to meet you and hear about your work and what you've been up to. I wonder, for anyone that's kind of listening or hasn't crossed paths with you until now, can you just give us a bit of a background to you? Again, the amazing board game that we're going to dive into. But yeah, just give us a little summary of what's going on for you, Rachel.
Yes, of course. So yeah, anyone that doesn't know the story, it all started right here in Portsmouth when I was a student many years ago. Well, over two decades ago, actually.
Okay.
And I was a mature student at Portsmouth University. I did everything backwards. So I had two young children and I was doing a law degree and I was driving a taxi to pay my way through university. And I was out on a shift one evening and I stopped at a set of traffic lights.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a cab driver, time is money.
Yep.
And the thought that popped into my head was red light, miss a turn.
Okay.
And then I imagined my taxi being a playing piece and then all the destinations I was travelling to being ones you'd find in a game. So that's how the idea for the game came about. And then I entered the idea into an enterprise challenge at Portsmouth University and I won the enterprise challenge. And then I set up a company and then I started raising sponsorship from destinations in the city because I realised I needed to raise some money to get
sure.
you know, everything done. And they were getting advertising in the game. So I went and raised some sponsorship to cover the artwork and manufacture. And that's been the model ever since, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And and I also featured in the very, very first series of Dragon's Den, which, albeit humiliating as it was,
okay.
gave my brand a good kickstart of exposure when it was screened, because although I got ripped apart in the filming,
okay.
by the time it was screened, I'd already launched both of my Destination Portsmouth and Destination London games, both of which are sold out. So, so that's where the story started.
And that's so amazing to me. And I've been lucky enough to speak to a few people on this podcast who just have this tiny seed of an idea. And then all of a sudden, it kind of grows and grows and grows. And it sounds like it's turned into something, you know, so special for the city. I mean, Destination Portsmouth, that was the first game?
It was the first game I created.
Okay.
I did do Destination London as well, but Destination Portsmouth was the first ever Portsmouth board game.
Okay.
If you have any other Portsmouth board games, this one was first.
Wow.
Which I'm very proud of.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to celebrate in Portsmouth.
Oh, there's so
much.
And
I know we'll go on to talk about it because you've got a new game to help celebrate Portsmouth for the centenary. But there are so many different places to support and businesses, and we have such a brilliant community in the city, don't we? What was the response to that first game when you launched it?
It was magical. Mm. I mean, if I could go back to that launch day in Cascades, I would do it all over again because we were very fortunate to have the support of the local papers and the local radio to kind of keep the momentum building.
Yeah,
and I mean, I didn't, back then I was very young. I was sort of blagging it, really. But when we launched in Cascades, I remember in the build-up to that launch day, we'd put a couple of adverts in the paper saying that, we'd be there at 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
for the launch of Destination Portsmouth and that, the inventor would be there signing games at 11 a.m. as a gimmick, really. Mm-hmm. And we were there at 8 o'clock in the morning setting up and blowing up balloons. And by 9 o'clock, we had to stop and I had to sit down and start signing because there was a queue going all the way out of Cascades into, it was just incredible. And we sold out very quickly of the stock we had then.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous because what is interesting about that particular edition was that the P is missing on the road, Southampton Roads, on the board
okay.
of the very first print run. And I was gutted when I realised that that was the mistake that I had overlooked that. I cried myself to sleep. I was so gutted. And then after we did the second run, I realised that that distinguishes the first ever copy of Destination Portsmouth.
Okay.
So if you have the P missing.
Like a collector's item.
Absolutely. And if you have my signature from that day in 2004, that's quite special because I was signing copies. So
part of the history of the whole story, like the beginning. And if you like look back on that time, did you have any clue then like where this game would take you or where it would lead?
Oh, no, not at all. You know, I was just relieved to have gotten through that first Christmas because it was a lot of work.
Yes.
And quite scary. But I also realise now when I look back, you know, if I was to say to that young girl anything, I'd say, you know what, well done. Because I did, it was good. It was a lot of work. And I realise now how amazing it was to achieve that number one spot in Hamleys and to get the listings that we did locally.
And just to take a leap, you know, like a huge leap into the unknown.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was something I wasn't intending to do. Mm. I'd gone to university to do a law degree and, you know, be a barrister and get paid to argue. that was my original plan in life. But so I ended up running the company. I still carried on with the business and studying. And then I did my dissertation in my third year on intellectual property. So it tied in with what I was doing with the business. So I could take a year off, do the dissertation, run the company. Mm-hmm. And just kept going. So that's how it started and how it built.
And why board games? Is there anything up until that point in your life that, you know, was it a passion or an interest, or was it just the idea really struck you and then it went from there?
I had always loved board games.
Okay.
And when I mean, my first ever job was in a little fish shop, a fishmonger's called Hooper's Fresh Fish on Gladys Avenue. And I was earning, I think, £1.20 an hour. I think I was 14 when I got that job. And I would take my, you know, you get your little brown envelope pay packet back then. And I'd go to Woolworths in North End and buy, you know, a Scrabble or a, I loved games and I wanted to have my own collection of games.
Okay.
So I did build up games and we always played games as a family. Chess, backgammon, Scrabble, Monopoly, they were, you know, firm favourites. And of course, New Year's Eve was the only night of the year we could stay up past bedtime and we'd play board games all the way up till midnight and then go out on the street with our pots and pans and sing Auld Lang Syne with the neighbours.
I love that.
But that's what board games for me are all about. It's the memories that they create because they bring families together.
Oh, 100%. And you only have to think how time has moved on and technology's advanced and that does create some kind of separation in families, doesn't it? So I love that, the thought, you know, no TV on, everyone sat round connecting, you know, having a laugh together or whatever it is, if you get the competitive family member who gets angry or sad if they haven't won. I love this, Rachel. I wonder if you touched on appearing on Dragon's Den. How was that as an experience?
Oh, it was terrifying. It was hideous because when I went for the audition in the summer of 2004, I met with the producers who were very lovely. So they go through the process of, you know, the kind of thing you're going to go through on the day of filming. But it was completely different to the actual day of filming.
Okay.
So, and through that audition process, they also did kind of find out what my strong points were, what I wasn't that great at. And of course, they knew that the numbers bit was a bit that I was going to struggle with. So, and then on the day of filming, I remember, so then you go back, you know, for the final filming. And I remember having my hair and makeup done. I told everybody I was doing it. I was so excited to be on TV.
Of course.
I had my hair and makeup done. And you start, you see, back then it was when you had the stairs, not the lifts. You had the stairs, very steep set of stairs. You stand at the bottom and I had my business plan with me and they took it off me just before I went up the steps. Because I didn't even know that we were going to be stood. They said, you're going to go upstairs, you're going to stand on an X on the floor and then wait for the producer's nod. Then you're going to do your 5-minute pitch, which is kind of how that went. So I went up the stairs and there was no boardroom table. There was no, you know, tea and coffee. It was, and we didn't even know at that point what this show was going to be called. So, because we were very first season.
Okay.
So then I stood on the X, producer's nod. I did my 5-minute pitch, which I thought I did brilliantly. Mm. And I stood there grinning like a Cheshire cat and think they're going to love me. Oh, my goodness. And then the influx of interrogation came. Doug Richard was the worst. I ran off crying halfway through filming. And it was one of those weird scenarios because I know now it's entertainment. But back then, I really struggled with it because I had worked so hard. I'd achieved so much.
Sure.
And it was ripped apart on national television. Yes. And I was worried that, you know, sponsors might pull out, or perhaps the public will think it's rubbish and no one's going to buy it. And, you know, I ran off halfway through filming crying, and they had to redo my makeup. And I said, look, I'm not going to get back on unless the last two dragons are nice to me. And that's the reason why Peter Jones and Simon Woodroofe were a lot more pleasant, because I'd signed the release form, but they couldn't use the footage unless I'd completed the filming.
Sure.
So we completed the filming. I cried the whole way home. I was an absolute mess. And it really got me down for quite a while.
I can imagine.
And then I had to, you know, the October launch was coming up in Hamley. So I had to just shake it off, dust myself down and think, you know what, I'm just going to do this. So I did. And then we launched in Hamleys, and I just got very lucky with the sequence of events, because BBC and Meridian got hold of the story. Mm-hmm. They came into Hamleys. They filmed. We had all my friends and family there helping to promote it. And the stock that Hamleys had ordered for the 6-week launch period, by 5 o'clock, we'd sold out on that day.
Amazing.
And then I'd phoned up, because we'd had the reporters in. They did their filming for the, you know, the TV news and stuff locally. So I was able to phone up Meridian, I think I got hold of, and I said, oh, if it hasn't gone out yet, can you let them know that we've sold out? And you see Fred Dynage, you know, he does this with his finger on his ear, and he says, oh, we've just heard they've sold out of that at Hamleys. And then bang, we had an instant demand. So we then delivered double the stock the next day.
Okay.
And then it just kept selling through. And then by, I think it was the 16th of November, I remember it clearly because I was doing a speech at the Hampshire Rose Bowl, is what it was called at the time.
Yeah.
And it just hit number one in Hamleys online and in store, and it stayed at number one for the whole Christmas period. So, and of course, then in December, we then had the Portsmouth launch, which also, so that whole time frame, it was magic, because I didn't really understand failure at that point. Mm. It was just go, 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 and, you know, anything was possible. And I look back at that, and no matter whatever happens after that, no one can take that away from me. That happened. It's part of my little story.
Yeah.
And I'll always be proud of that.
Oh, that's
I'm proud of the people.
Proud of.
Anyone that bought a copy, especially those people that queued up in Cascades that day, you know, for my little gimmicky signature. It was, I'm so thankful, because without those people buying a copy of any of my games, I wouldn't have the brand that I've got now. Yeah. So I don't take that for granted.
No, and that's why it's so exciting to think, because I know that you want to share with us that you're launching a special edition to celebrate the centenary that has 100 destinations, historical landmarks, independent businesses, cultural locations. So from 1926 to 2026. I mean, how did you even narrow it down? I mean, there's so much to talk about in the city, isn't there?
Oh, it's been amazing. I mean, this project's really exciting. So the council came to me actually, I think January, February time, and asked, you know, would we consider doing a you know, a centenary edition for the Portsmouth 100 celebrations? And I was a little bit on the fence at the time. And the reason being, we did the original game. And then, you know, 10 years later, I did a 10th anniversary game.
Okay.
And about 4 years ago, 3 years ago, I did a 20th anniversary game. And I thought, so anyone that's a fan of Destination may already have three copies of Destination Portsmouth. Why would anyone want a fourth copy?
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit on the fence. But with this particular edition, this is going to have something that none of those editions have. And this is going to be a lot of the throwback places, the bygone Portsmouth, the destinations in the city that just don't exist anymore, which is really exciting. And what that's going to spur, I think, is not just a family game that you're going to play and enjoy, but a game filled with memories and stories
and
that
learning.
You're going to share. And learning, because we've got a heritage guide that will come with the game.
Okay.
So for any destination that we feature on the board, we'll have a little bit of history in the heritage guide. Very interesting.
And that's so nice when you think about that kind of like intergenerational dimension of it, where you have people that have this knowledge, that have lived in the city for a long time, that can talk about those stories and some of those landmarks. So some of them I saw, that some of them I don't even know. Chapman's Laundry, the McMurdo Factory, Hilsey Gasworks, the Tricorn, the Mecca, is that right? The Birdcage. I mean, some of these I've heard of. Is there any memories that came up for you when you were looking back at some of these kind of historical landmarks?
Yes, I have got some for me, but I have also got some intel on places like McMurdo, because my mum worked there.
Right.
So she came over from Malta in 1958 when she was 14, because my granddad was in the Navy. My grandparents are Maltese. So they got offered a placement over here. And in her 20s, she worked for the McMurdo factory. So the Big Yellow Self Storage on the corner of Rodney Road, which is just up from Portsmouth Football Club.
Yes.
That's where the McMurdo factory was.
Okay.
And so my mum was, I think her role was on the making injection moulding mm-hmm. plastic parts. Mm-hmm. And it was for nuclear submarines. And it's only recently that we found this out. And I was like, Mum, how come we just didn't know that bit about your life? She said, well, we had the Official Secrets Act, so we couldn't talk about it.
Okay,
so there's that. And then there's a tailor that she worked for, I forget the name, but where she was doing like gold thread sewing for the Royal Navy. But she's got some incredible stories. Mm. And the Mecca, which Mecca Locarno, which later became Ritzy's nightclub.
Yes.
That's where she met my dad.
Is that who is, in Commercial Road?
So that's, so that's opposite where You Need Us is.
Yes.
Which brings us nicely into my favourite location. So You Need Us was a fabulous gift shop, joke shop.
It fancy stocked, dress.
Fancy dress, all sorts of stuff. But it also was my first ever stockist of Destination Portsmouth.
Oh, amazing.
As a retail store. They opened, well, they were established in 1923 and they closed their doors in 2019 after 96 years of trading. So it's great to be able to you know, immortalise them in this
Celebrate
game.
Celebrate them. And when I was doing my research, I noticed that you went to St Edmunds. And I also went to St Edmunds. So You Need Us was always on that walk through to the school.
It was.
And a great place to like go in and after school. Like it was a fun shop. There was lots going on there.
Yeah, and we used to buy jokes and stuff, which I played. Yeah. I think I was a pretty good girl at school. I didn't really do anything wrong until my final year and I became a bit of a rebel without a clue.
Okay.
And I won't ever forget going to You Need Us and I bought this fake sick and I put it on the floor in the science lab. And when the teacher came in, he wanted to know who had been ill and nobody would own up to it. And in the end, one of the lads, you know, said it was her and I got sent to room 99.
Oh,
but then I was
rebel.
Cool for the first time ever,
that's funny.
Which isn't something I was obviously encouraged children to do, but that was one of my memories of being, you know, my you know, brief period of rebellion at school.
That's funny. And I remember as well, because obviously I was at that area a lot, like the Tricorn was there when I was growing up, and thinking about that being in the city, and like Charlotte Street Market was underneath there and had all the little shops that you could get the kind of cool clothes from. There's so much, even in my lifetime, that I can reflect back from the city. So I can't imagine how nice it's going to be for families to sit down together and to get all of their memories out and share their stories. What an exciting time. So I know you do a lot of work with Cash for Kids, is that right?
That's correct.
So how does that work with the game?
So as I mentioned earlier, when I did the first game, I raised money through sponsorship to help cover the project costs. And that has been a model that I've used for Destination forever since then. So it works really well because there's a lot of setup like artwork and manufacturership mm-hmm. and warehousing, all that kind of stuff. So but because we have 100 destinations in this particular edition, mm-hmm. which is double what we would normally have in a game, I'm able to gift half of those to Cash for Kids.
Okay.
So that the sponsorship that is raised through that. So if you want to sponsor, for example, the Birdcage is a fabulous venue that existed a long time ago now. Some really exciting, even David Bowie played there, Tina Turner, even. And so, you know, maybe if you're, I don't know, a club on the music scene and you'd like to sponsor the Birdcage, you can, your name will be on the Birdcage card as the sponsor.
Amazing.
And the money you pay for the sponsorship, my company will then donate that to the charity.
Great.
So it's a great way to raise money for them, but it's also a great way of them connecting with businesses locally and, you know, sharing what it is that they do with the fabulous work.
Yeah.
Cash for Kids, you know, for children locally living in poverty. It really is a fantastic charity.
And are there spaces on the board that you're looking to fill? So are there still some sponsorship available?
Yes, we've only recently started to reach out because we didn't do it too early in the year because we need to build the momentum. So mm-hmm. we've recently opened it up for sponsors. So, we're looking for anyone that is, if you're just wanting to sponsor a historical location, mm-hmm. and you don't have to be a business. If you're a member of the public and you want to have your name on the card and it's a memory for you and, you know, you're happy to sponsor it, your money will go to the charity, we can do that. And then if you're perhaps a business or an attraction that is current mm-hmm. but has a long-standing history and you want to be in the game, then, you know, we can also look at placing you in there. We're trying to make sure that we've got a good spread of destinations from 1926 for each decade all the way through to 2026. So there will be some more recent places in the last sort of 10 to 20 years. So there'll be some more recent, you know, locations as well. But I think it's going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah. And a really lovely way to capture this celebration, the centenary year for the city, something to kind of like, not saying that the other games aren't there for that also, because they all are celebrating the city in their own way. But like you said, nothing has really gone backwards and really honoured some of those histories and personal stories attached to them. So that's really interesting. If anyone is listening that wants to be part of this game, I'm sure Rachel would love to hear from you. We'll make sure we share how people do that, Rachel. Is there anywhere that they can follow along the project? Do you share or have a newsletter?
Yes, so on destinationboardgames.com, there is on the homepage, there's the contact us, so you can easily get in touch with us.
Sure.
And we'll be, any coverage that we get, we'll be posting that on our website.
Amazing. So talk to me about... very exciting. When's this game coming out?
So we're going to close the Portsmouth 100 celebrations with this game. So as you know, it was launched, the Portsmouth 100 campaign was launched in January on New Year's Day, and it is a whole year of celebrations. So because board games are traditionally a Christmas thing, we are going to close the year with the game. So we'll have stock in time for November, December when you're doing your Christmas shopping. Mm-hmm. And I think as soon as it's gone into manufacture, we'll start taking pre-orders.
Yeah, because it's a lovely thing. If you have got employees, if you've got a company, like what a lovely thing to do to be able to give this to your team, for example, and know that that money, does a percentage of that money go back to Cash for Kids also, or is it just the sponsorship?
So the sponsorship primarily.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Destination Christmas game, which we did do for the charity.
Okay.
So we have the profit from that goes to the charity.
Amazing.
And that celebrates the Mission Christmas aspect of what it is they do. So, you know, at Christmas when you donate toys and games, perhaps in Smith's Toys, and then they get collected and then given out to children that need it at Christmas. You don't have anything to open. That's the Mission Christmas campaign.
Amazing.
So,
there's
destination.
Loads of ways to get involved, really.
Absolutely,
and,
yes.
And to give back.
Mm.
Oh, I absolutely love this, Rachel. I wonder, what's next? I mean, I know I shouldn't be asking you this because you're just about to launch something, and I know that's probably a really busy time for you, but do you have like a vision for these destination games, or are there any other games, or like in terms of your next steps, like where's that going to take you?
We've got lots planned at the moment.
Okay.
I mean, there's some I can't tell you about because
they're
still under contract, so I can't mention those, but yeah, some very exciting stuff happening. And yeah, we've got some releases coming out next year, but our planning is often sort of up to 2 years ahead. So we're working on projects now that won't actually go to market till 2028. But that's the nature of what we do. So it's, so we do have lots in the pipeline. And we're we are relaunching Destination Hogwarts, our Harry Potter game.
So talk to me about what are the destination games? Remind me.
So we have all the regional games. So we have like Portsmouth, Bournemouth and Poole, Brighton, Hove,
Amazing.
Sheffield, Cardiff, Scotland. We do capital cities. So we have like London, Dublin. Have I mentioned Cardiff already?
Yes.
New York, Paris. And then we have South Africa, which was a country edition. And then we've got Destination Europe and Destination USA that are in development.
Wow.
And then we do licensing. I love licensing. So my first license was, I think back in 2006, that was Destination Hogwarts.
Okay.
And we then also launched Destination Animation with Disney Pixar, which was very exciting. That had characters, I think Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo and The Incredibles.
So when you say licensing, do they take that, they create the game, but you give them your permission?
No, so it's the other way around. So they ask me if I'd like to do it.
Okay.
We then have a contract with the licensor.
Right.
We get sight of all the assets. We then create the game to make sure it fits the destination theme, but it also... you know, as a fan of whatever it is we're creating, we want to make sure that when you play it, it engages you, whether it's Harry Potter or the repair shop.
Sure.
Because we've got the repair shop as well. I love the licensing, especially when you get to go behind the scenes and meet the cast and do all the fun stuff.
I can imagine.
But there's a once the artwork's been done, there's an approval process to go through. And then once it's all signed off, we can launch. But every destination game has the same basic set of rules as the baseline. So if you've played Destination Portsmouth, you can play Destination Hogwarts, you can play Destination The Repair Shop, You can play all of the destination games. Once you've learned to play the rules once, you can play all of them.
And that's great because you can learn about somewhere completely different, can't you? Or if there's like an aspirational place that you want to visit, like you can visit it and play the board game to learn about it.
It's like, you know, you can travel around the world without leaving your living room.
I love that. And how are they received? Like all of these different places, how are they received within those communities?
Oh, it's fabulous. I think when you get to play it as a family and you recognise places on the board, like I said earlier, it evokes memories and stories and conversation and engagement. So I think that's what's special about it. It makes it that much more personal.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just thinking about how it probably makes cities just feel really seen. You know, everyone's got their own game, a chance to kind of celebrate where they live. I can imagine there's something really in that where you just feel like your city or your location, whatever it is been really seen.
I think most people are very proud about.
Yeah,
they're proud of where they live. I mean, obviously no more than Portsmouth. Portsmouth is the proudest city, I think, in the whole of the UK.
Yes.
And it's great for that. But also as a souvenir of a place you've visited or if you want to go somewhere, say you want to go to New York, the New York game is a great way to play it and then figure out, oh, those are destiny. I want to go there. I'd like to go there. I didn't know that existed. So there's places that you can, you know, experience and find out about just by playing the game.
Yeah. Rachel, I've learned so much from talking to you. Honestly, it's been a real joy. And I'm just so excited to see the final game when it's finished, ready for this Christmas. And I would really encourage anyone who wants to be part of it to kind of reach out to Rachel because there's loads of opportunities and what a great way for businesses or anyone who wants to give back and feel part of something. It's a great chance to do that. We've already spoken about how much there is to celebrate in the city. It's a big year for that. The City of Culture Bid, the centenary, it feels like it's all going on. I wonder, what would you like to most celebrate about our city?
I think the community and how that comes together. So, you know, we'd love to see places like Portsmouth Football Club being involved because they've been around forever.
Sure.
And anywhere that gives the space for that, for community engagement and friendship.
Yeah.
And I think that's what life's all about, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
It is. And it's so important, just those connections. And there are lots of spaces and places that can do that. So that would be great to see them on there. And I wonder, do you have, we ask every guest, do you have any kind of tip about Portsmouth? So it could be a view you like, a restaurant, it could be a walk you do, somewhere in the city that feels like a special place for you.
Can I have two?
You can have two, of course.
Okay, so I would say go up to the top of the hill to where the Chichilian is.
Yes.
And go and get a lovely, you know, cold drink from in there and go up to the top and you can see the whole of Portsmouth from up there. It's a spectacular view. You can, you know, if it's fireworks night, it's even more spectacular.
Yes.
But it's beautiful, you know, sunrise, sunset.
Yes.
You've just got the whole of Portsmouth from up there, which
great perspective. You've sort of zoomed out a little bit, haven't you, from up there?
Absolutely.
So you get, I hear you.
And then one of my other favourite places, which all of my friends know about because I go on about it so much, is if you walk through Fox's Forest, you will come to this beautiful little place called Casemates. It's recording studios and a cafe.
Yes, yes.
They do open mic nights on Mondays, and those are run by the Hill Brothers, who are just, they should be celebrated. They're amazing people. And the cafe itself, they do a lot of different events, whether it's painting or all sorts of things that bring people together. And it's there's something about it. It's that little bit of magic. And it's covered in fairy lights, which sells me all the time. I'm sold on fairy lights.
So. I love that. Yeah. And it's really great to hear you shout out some places north of the city. I think, you know, the seafront and the coast, it kind of always catches people's eye. So it's really lovely that you've shouted out those places because Portsmouth, there's way more to Portsmouth than, you know, just the seafront. So big shout out to Casemates and hopefully everyone can get themselves up to the top of Portsdown Hill. And especially, you know, when the weather's like this, I'm sure you can see for miles up there.
It's amazing. And when you're stood up there, it does kind of, you know, because I've been up there recently for a walk and I'm thinking there are so many places in Portsmouth that I'd love to have in the game. There's probably too many to include unless we ended up with four games in one. This will be two games in one because we're going to have one game will be you're going to play from 1926. to 1976.
Okay.
And then the other game will be 1976 to 2026, because 100 destinations, you'll be playing all night.
Okay.
So 50 destinations is still going to go on for a little bit, but around an hour and a half, I think, the game will take to play. So, yeah, it will be great to celebrate as many places. But that's the beauty of the sponsorship, because we'll have 100 destinations, but potentially another 100 businesses that sponsor those destinations. So we're going to really celebrate so many places and people and companies locally. So all round, it's win-win.
I love that, Rachel. Thank you so much for your time today. And yeah, really excited for when the game is finished. And we'll do all we can to support you here at Shaping Portsmouth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.